Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello, and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast. I'm Joe Devine, and I'm joined now by Seb Stafford-Blore.
Hello, Joe.
Hello, Seb. Seb and I today spend the entire episode talking about Manchester United. Now, of course, this is after Tottenham's visit to Old Trafford, in which they won 6-1, which was an astonishing game of football, probably for all the wrong reasons if you are a United supporter, and for many of the right ones if you are a Tottenham supporter. Funny how that works, isn't it? And we'll also be talking about the club's ability, stroke inability in recruitment in the transfer window. Of course, the deadline was a couple of days ago now, and no Jadon Sancho, which we learn having read an amazing piece by The Athletic, by Laurie Whitwell, I think David Ornstein, and some contributions from Raphael Honigstein as well. We learn so much about what they describe as, you know, the failure to secure Jadon Sancho. I was cringing reading it, and so was Seb, I think. So we talk about that quite a lot in today's episode. If you would like to read it, and I highly, highly encourage you to do so, you should visit theathletic.com/TIFO. That is theathletic.com/TIFO. There you can get a £1 introductory offer to join The Athletic on a monthly basis, which is, you know, amazing value for the quality of the content that you're going to get. But whatever you do, make sure you read this piece because it's hilarious. Anyway, we're going to talk about that now. So I will leave you in the cool hands and the warm embrace of myself and Sebastian Stafford-Blore. Okay, where else to begin? But Manchester United, of course, humiliated over the weekend, 6-1 by Tottenham Hotspur. It seemed that Jose Mourinho very much enjoyed that. And I also enjoyed Adam Crafton's tweet noting how he'd done a return pat on the head. So, you know, there's a bit of extra drama, a sort of subplot for us there to enjoy too. But of course, the football is what we're here to talk about. And Tottenham were absolutely devastating. In a way, I don't really want to take away from them by talking about how bad Manchester United were, because Tottenham were just unbelievably good, particularly when you recall the first game of the season against Everton, Seb. We talked about it at length on this podcast. I believe I described them as fucking terrible in that game. I cannot believe the turnaround to the performances like they're recently putting in, particularly against Manchester United.
Yeah, I think that's right, Joe. I mean, it's really interesting. I think the turnaround, you can almost trace exactly back to that little bit of skill that Tanguy Ndombele did in the St. Mary's centre circle,
which
set Son Heung-min away for an equalising goal. And ever since then, the improvement's been remarkable. I would, I know you'd expect me to kind of to sing all the, you know, sing Tottenham's praises, but I would just be a little bit reserved because I thought Tottenham were very, very good. I thought Manchester United were absolutely clownish. Honestly, yeah, I want to celebrate the Tottenham performance. Fabulous week for Jose Mourinho, wonderful achievement, you know, and also symbolically just a wonderful occasion for fans not to be there, of course, but to watch a result like that in a place like that. It's very, very important. A lot of very disappointing Tottenham afternoons have happened at Old Trafford. Nevertheless, it's really difficult to look beyond the comedy that Tottenham played around. It was, you know what I would compare it to? You know when you see a really great goal, like a 30-yarder, it goes in off the top, off the bottom of the crossbar or something.
Yeah.
It's the equivalent of a goalkeeper having a really rubbish touch, which ruins the aesthetic of it. That's what that game was to me, I think.
Okay. Do you know what it was to me? I feel like I've been in situations like this before, maybe on the odd date, or just at a kind of family party or something, where I've started poorly, lost confidence, and by means of trying to regain confidence, I've just dug deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into a sort of anxiety spiral.
At
most family parties. You know, in my elder years, Seb, I've learned how to take a deep breath, calm down, and, you know, just be normal for a bit so as to not increase the pressure on myself. But goodness me, in my olden days, I really would, you know, win the award every time for, you know, stupidest fool. It just felt like one of those occasions. It felt like, when I watched the beginning of the game, Manchester United, and this is going to sound like a, you know, clutching to straws, but from the kickoff up to the penalty, they just looked sharp. They looked like really up for it. They looked like they were going to go very fast. The first thing I noticed was that, you know, the ball is played back by, I think, Fernandez at the centre circle to Matic. Two options out left as he turns. Luke Shaw is one of them. Marcus Rashford is the other, who's in a slightly more condensed area and who will be under more pressure if he receives the ball. It's a more difficult pass to play. Matic zips the pass straight into him and Rashford runs down the wing. And I think, wow, okay, they're up for it. This is a strong start. That's not passive. That's not, you know, slow-paced. Eventually, of course, the ball comes to Martial and there's a crazy tackle which leads to the penalty. And I thought, hey, lads, it is Tottenham. It's going to be one of those days. I couldn't have been more wrong, and I think the surprise really was how quickly it turned around. So if I think I'm right in saying that by 7 minutes, Tottenham had scored two goals, both of which, you know, were just seemed to be a comedy of errors by United defence, and also, you know, a lack of shielding in front of them as well. The second is the second or the first, the Harry Kane free kick, Seb?
It was the second, Joe.
The second seems perhaps the least forgivable of the two. I mean, the first was just kind of, you know, a bunch of poor panicking headers by Manchester United defenders left in a position, you know, that made them vulnerable. And also Harry Maguire seeming to pull Luke Shaw out of the way of defending, which didn't really seem to make any sense to me.
Let me ask you a question about that quickly. Have you ever seen a defender commit more mistakes in a single phase of play than that?
I don't think I have, no. And I think the combination of Maguire and Shaw just lost confidence as the game went on. You know, they were responsible for the Sun goal that was sort of chipped over from the front post. You know, they didn't, positionally, they were poor. When he pulled him over, I mean, I do think that if Harry Maguire hadn't been involved, hadn't rushed over, presumably lacking confidence in his teammate to clear that Luke Shaw probably would have cleared for the first goal. But Harry Maguire went over and pulled him down and literally left the space for the goal. I don't understand what the, you know, short of I don't trust my teammate, I don't know what the thinking is there. And maybe it's just a panicked head. That's before the first goal has even gone in. So I don't understand how you begin a game as panicked as that, particularly when you're 1-0 up. Should we talk about the red card quickly?
Just before that, I mean, I'm really interested by that sequence you mentioned, the quick turnaround, because I think it involves a remarkable mental collapse, actually, because, like you said, the penalty gets awarded after, I think, 34, 33 seconds.
Yeah.
And everybody watching the game, including, you know, any Man United fans, Tottenham fans, even probably some of the players playing in the game would have thought, right, we know exactly how this game is going to end because we've seen this so many times before. And then within another 6 minutes, they're behind. And they're behind as a result of one mental error for the second goal, for the second Tottenham goal, and one meltdown, almost comedy sequence for the first. And it's to me, it's very hard to avoid that or to ignore that as a kind of a description of Manchester United's mental state. I mean, I know we read too much into these things, but that's, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that from United at Old Trafford.
No, I mean, it did seem particularly unique. And also, I'm sure it is a coincidence. I don't mean to suggest any foul play at all, but I felt like, you know, the coincidence there being that it happened, the final game before the deadline day of the transfer window. Yeah, we've heard people, even from the dressing room, like Luke Shaw, coming out and saying that, you know, they're expecting that the club are going to support them with more depth in the team. The odd news all summer, I suppose, which I don't think I've really clicked before now, so I'm as guilty of it as anybody else who didn't. That, you know, the reality is, sure, everyone's talking about Jadon Sancho, and other forwards, and obviously Edinson Cavani has come in, and Alex Tellez as a defender. But really, defence is the area that needed strengthening for obvious reasons, which couldn't be clearer after the Tottenham game. And you know, the talk prior to the window was that perhaps a centre-back partner for Harry Maguire. The fact that Harry Maguire cost £80 million, I really feel sorry for him. I honestly do. I think that, you know, that was obviously an inflated figure at the time. It serves as a as part of the fact that, you know, Manchester United were part of this deal. Therefore, it is an inflated price, as it would be with any top six club, perhaps even more so because other teams are very aware of how Manchester United like to operate in the transfer market, i.e. they like to be taken advantage of and spend more money than they need to at the end of the window, which we've probably seen again this summer. And I think it's going to negatively impact him. I really do. I think, you know, there's one thing is the pressure of being the captain of that team, the leader of what that team currently is, with all the expectation, despite, you know, what's happening at the executive level and what's happening at board level. But you must take exceptional resolve and strength of character to come back from not just a performance like that, but also what happened to him when he was on holiday, right?
Oh, absolutely. It was also, I mean, there are very few players who have experience of being in that kind of story and receiving that kind of exposure. And also, one of the important things is that with that kind of situation, when the police is involved, you don't have the normal right of reply because it's an investigation. You're not allowed to. And so, I suppose, from a mental perspective, Harry Maguire had gone through the summer without really feeling like he's had any kind of break because he's had the examination of the season and he's gone straight back. During what's supposed to be kind of a layoff, he's gone straight back to the front page. It's going to be very, very hard.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think so. So, you know, I do feel sorry for him, as I would any defender that was subject to that kind of. I mean, should we call it a drilling? Let's talk about that piece that was published, written by The Athletic, written by Laurie Whitwell, David Ornstein, and some contributions from Raphael Honigstein as well, which talks about I believe it's called The Failed Pursuit of Jadon Sancho. I knew it was bad, and I'd heard some of the journalists talking about it in the last couple of days. I had no idea how bad it was. I mean, it's unbelievable to read the details of this piece. The main one for me, you know, the main offender being that United's first contract offer to Sancho would pay him less money than he could make in his current position, which just seems astonishing to me that the club would ever even do that. And I appreciate that the details are related to incentives and bonuses, etc., but it's going to be clear to United how much money he could possibly make, and to offer him less as a result of what other players in their team make. I just cannot understand the thinking behind that. I also think, you know, there were rumours flying around this summer that if United weren't able to get the deal done this summer, that you know, perhaps it would be more difficult in future transfer windows. The expectation there was always that, well, other clubs might have more money, other clubs might come in for him, and he might have interest elsewhere. The potential reality now is that he reportedly feels undervalued by the bids that United did make, which didn't ever come anywhere near what Dortmund said the price would have to be, and also were obviously absolutely nowhere near the deadline that Dortmund set up front would be the deadline. So the player now feels kind of dejected, you know, reportedly as a result of the way that Manchester United conducted themselves. Even if they were to plump up the money in January or next summer, there may be interest from other clubs, there may be competition, and also there's a good chance that perhaps he doesn't actually want to play for the club now because of the way that he felt treated this summer. Reading through, Seb, can you imagine a worse operation?
I think that was one of the details which struck which stays with me now. The other is there's a line in there, it's a paragraph in there about how essentially we don't want to give away too much because we want people to actually go and read it, but about how essentially Manchester United were kind of expecting some kind of COVID discount.
Yeah.
Basically, it was Dortmund were, for all intents and purposes, very clear about their valuation from a very early point. And Manchester United were disappointed that sort of the economic circumstances around Europe and the world weren't taken into account. And you just think, I can't sort of rationalise that that lack of common sense. Because if you're a Dortmund, you've got probably, arguably, the most saleable asset in European football at the moment. Probably the most, you know, valuable player that could conceivably be transferred. Why would you, faced with a negotiator who is insistent on lowballing you, why would you not say, this is my price, and if you don't meet it, we'll go into next summer when Real Madrid will probably be back in the market. Manchester City might be back in the market.
Particularly when the player doesn't want necessarily to leave. It's clear, apparently, that he wasn't going to agitate to leave. He'd be happy to stay there another summer. Why would you give someone a discount when you're probably going to make more money next summer anyway and keep a good player?
Yeah, also, Joe, by all accounts, Jadon Sancho has a good relationship with Marcus Rashford. He was more than willing to join Manchester United. He was excited at the prospect and evidently wanted to. And yet, as you said, the way this has been handled, and I think one of the major factors for me, the noise which has surrounded it, because it's almost been like day by day, there's been a running commentary on it. And what struck me when I've actually read the piece twice. I woke up very early this morning, read it, went out for coffee, read it again. And I think on the second reading, I thought, it's amazing if you compare the amount of noise made with just how little Manchester United seem to have actually done during this process, mechanical progress. The ratio between those two things is amazing. Honestly, it's quite staggering. And also, to dedicate so much time, we've had this elongated transfer window, far more opportunity than normal time-wise to pull off a big, complicated transfer. And yet there doesn't seem to have been any progress at all, really. It's very difficult to get your head around.
I mean, the other thing that the piece says is that Solskjaer, was desperate for Sancho to join and had communicated that to Ed Woodward, who I don't know if he's named specifically, but it is thought that the club just didn't believe Dortmund's deadline. They just didn't take it seriously. We're obviously surprised later when Dortmund said, no, we did mean that. We weren't just lying. Here's all the logic. Here's why it makes sense. By the way, if you still want Sancho, it's going to cost you more than what we originally said, because otherwise it makes us look stupid. Manchester United's negotiating tactic appears to a layman like me to have forced Dortmund into a position where they would have to up their price and not reduce it, because to reduce it or to sell at the original price would have made them look stupid. So I not only is it not intuitive, it appears to be counterintuitive, or at least that's the way that it's played out. And I think supporters might be forgiving Seb, and journalists might be forgiving if this was a one-off, but it's not, is it? I mean, this is the thing. Like, this is something that happens with this club every single summer, every single transfer window. And the piece also notes how United have been active on the final day of the last three windows, which is perhaps that's a tactic some clubs would use. We've seen that happen with Tottenham in the past, who appear to think that they can find value around that time, and with Daniel Levy, I don't think anybody would argue that can be a successful tactic. With Manchester United, when you look into the context, it doesn't appear to be a tactic. It appears to be, I know that the common term that is going around is panic buying. It feels difficult to argue with that at the moment when Edison Cavani and a huge agent's fee is the result for a summer's work.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Well, also, Joe, you mentioned this being a common theme. Exactly the same thing happened with Maguire a year ago. It's exactly the same situation. I mean, you talk about the assumption that Dortmund would back off their asking price. United made the same mistake with Leicester. They sat all summer, they just assumed, they were told apparently £80 million beginning of the summer. That's the price if you want Harry Maguire. And so they spent the next, I think it was about 5 weeks, doing I'm not quite sure what, but at the end of it, them paying £80 million. Again, after a lot of noise and after a lot of bluster. And if I was an authority at Borussia Dortmund, if I was a decision maker, I think I'd have been quite annoyed about the way information leaked out. I think I'd be quite irritated by the sort of the suggestion that Manchester United were winning these battles, and they had all this sort of antagonistic language involved in the transfer reporting, whereby it was kind of, you know, they're not going to back down to the Germans. I think my response to that would be, oh, fuck off, we're not going to sell them to you then.
Yeah,
and I know, I'm a layman too. But it's kind of, why would you think that would create any sort of atmosphere in which a better deal could be done?
You know, let's think about this though, right? Let's think about this, because this is clearly an issue. As you say, this is something that happened with Aaron Maguire last summer. This is something that's happened this summer with Jadon Sancho. Is the only route out of this for Manchester United to basically refuse to buy anyone over the price that they want to pay for 3 or 4 years to kind of reset this expectation in the market that if you pressure them, they'll just cough up? Because otherwise, I don't understand how you break that perception. Like, surely that's the only thing you can do, is to go after targets that you don't really want, that you know will be high value. That this is quite a good strategy, particularly if you don't want them. It's basically you say, like, we're fine. Next summer, we're going after Kylian Mbappe. We're prepared to pay this much money. You make it known. When it comes back and says, no, that's not enough, but if you pay this, we'll have it. You say, well, piss off then. Absolutely not. That's ridiculous. And you do that 4 summers in a row, meanwhile making yourself look like more of a failure, I suppose. But also re-establishing those boundaries, which it seems to me were just shattered in the immediate years after Ferguson left, where there was a lot of confusion around recruitment. There was also a lot of money spent. And, you know, Manchester United looked like they were the club that would stump up whatever the asking price was, because they were in such a desperate state that they needed these players. And, you know, there was a lot of pressure on them from supporters. And also, you know, the final Fergie years were fallow in terms of transfer incomings. I think the biggest year that they had was where they bought Ashley Young and David De Gea. Well, I can't remember when that was, but certainly, with the exception of Van Persie, there weren't a huge number of big transfers that happened towards, you know, in the last 5-10 years. I mean, since 2005, since the Glazers took over, let's put it that way. So obviously, there's been a dearth of that. It seems like this confluence of factors has resulted in this situation in which, you know, the squad is not strong enough. The squad is also, or at least the team, you know, has is prone to sort of massive lapses in confidence like this. They're also very aware of the idea that, you know, everyone around them thinks the squad needs to be strengthened, but that it probably won't, which doesn't leave you in a, you know, particularly good position. I mean, I think back to a couple of weeks ago when the Fulham chairman tweeted out saying that he was very sorry about the way that the club were defending and he was definitely going to get some more defenders. And you remember thinking, like, well, how the fuck do you feel if you're a Fulham centre-back reading that, like, 1 of 5? It's hardly going to instill any confidence. Presumably you only say that if you're confident that you're going to get the player you want. And with Manchester United, you just feel that that's never the case. So maybe that's the way to re-establish those boundaries, is just to intentionally, you know, say no for a few years.
Let me introduce another possibility, because I think this is in part indicative of the type of player Manchester United want to sign, and the type of player they feel they need to have to sustain their model. Because in reality, if you want to buy a Jadon Sancho, there isn't a bargain to be done. You're not going to get a fair price. And football reflects that over the years. If you wanted to buy Gareth Bale back in 2013, doesn't matter who you are, you're paying a world record transfer. And Real Madrid did. Sometimes, if you want that caliber of talent, you've just got to pay whatever the price tag is.
Well, and why wouldn't Dortmund ask for 147 million euros, which is what they got for Ousmane Dembele? Like, why? Literally, why wouldn't they? I mean, there is a literal precedent from the summer or 2 summers before for a player who, arguably, you know, I suppose it's unfair to say because he's been blighted by injury, but, you know, who's arguably of the same level, perhaps more, perhaps less, but not a huge deal either way.
And it showed itself again with Edison Cavani. When United needed a reaction, they didn't say, okay, let's look at the kind of the pool of, you know, 25-year-olds that we could nurture and you know, develop from maybe a kind of a top six level in the Premier League. They went for the guy with the name recognition, the billboard, the guy who commands the enormous agent fee.
On the who's available day.
Well, it's on the who's available day, and I appreciate they did bring in a couple of development players. They have
Diallo.
yeah, Palestri as well has joined. And great, terrific. But my question would be, why are those kind of transfers being done on the last day? If this is a properly thought out strategy.
Well, I don't think it is. I mean, I think that the piece seemed to indicate that, you know, the reason that the business was done late was because they were waiting to see what they would have to spend on Sancho. I'm uncertain whether those, I don't know this at all, but I wonder whether those deals would have gone through. Cavani aside, I don't believe that would have.
Sorry to jump across you, but isn't the consequence of that if you're waiting to the last minute to see what you will or won't pay for Jadon Sancho, the end result inevitably becomes that you end up overspending on whoever you're actually able to buy, yeah. And that's exactly what's happened. With all due respect to the. To the players who have come in. I happen to think that Edinson Cavani will do fine. Yeah. I think he's still a good player. I think he will still give a contribution. I think it's just unfortunate that he's arrived in this very negative context. There is still a player there. This is not them signing Bastian Schweinsteiger again. But it's just...
Good old Basti.
Wonderful player in his prime, but he was bought because of, SEO, really, I think, in my opinion. Not literally, but you know what I'm getting at. It baffles me that a club of this might, size, and resources still functions this way. It kind of lurches in the dark. And I'm going to use this to plug another Athletic piece. Nice little segue. I compared this to... we converted this article to script, actually. But Chelsea's capture of Kai Havertz. Now, supposedly, that was an 18-month process full of, slow negotiations, hand-holding... trust building, all of these kind of things. And eventually a very expensive, very large transfer being completed, but one I think the football community looked at and thought, yeah, fair enough, Havertz is a super player, 80 million sounds about right, or whatever the fee actually is for him.
Yeah.
United, everything seems a bit more reactionary. And also, I had no idea until about 2 or 3 months ago that Havertz was a possibility for Chelsea. So for over a year... Marina Granovskaya and the rest of the technical department, even before Frank Lampard arrived at the club, they'd been working in silence and in quote-unquote secret. And you compare and contrast that with the great ceremony of the Manchester United transfer saga, where it's kind of everyone must know, everyone must be beaten around the head with this kind of...
Oh, Wesley Schneider, man.
Oh, my goodness, me. Wesley Schneider, Nico Gaitan, he was another one.
Oh, yeah, for a couple of years, yeah.
For Who a couple of there? Years, absolutely. Benzema was there. There was that Neymar, Bale, Ronaldo saga. I'm glad I'm not a Manchester United fan because I think this would just frustrate me to no end.
Well, and I can see why, because regardless of the reality, and don't misunderstand me, I'm not saying that the club are this, but perceptionally, particularly online. Amongst young football fans, United are a joke in this regard. Like, they're the punchline of these jokes now. And whether that's true or not, and whether that deserves to be true or not, is kind of besides the point, because the court of public opinion has ruled, and United are a joke. And that's when you think back to, when did Ferguson leave? 2013?
Yeah.
7 years ago? It feels a lot longer now, doesn't it? If you could think back to the idea in any way of United being a joke... It's just unthinkable, right? But year on year on year on year, despite the fact that the team just finished third, had a fantastic period after the lockdown, looked like a very bright, very exciting team, and of course have a number of excellent players. I don't mean in the team sense at all. Obviously, we're talking about this after the Tottenham game, but I mean at executive level. I mean in the ability to successfully recruit players, or for there not to be these enormous leaks. And we don't know whether to blame the club for that, or to blame agents, or if other clubs have realised that there is a benefit to leaking. I mean, it's perfectly possible, as a hypothetical, that Dortmund realise a good way of trying to get them to drum up more money is to leak that this is happening, and then to have them. Supporters just pile the pressure on. It's like tickling United's Achilles heel, as everyone will know on Twitter every single day. Anytime anyone says anything from Manchester United, the first reply is like, announce Sancho or whatever. Sign, it's similar to like announce party Pele. For Arsenal. Yeah, sign Maradona.
One thing occurred to me, and this might be a really useful way of charting Manchester United's decline, in a subjective way. I'm a Tottenham fan, and I've just turned 36. So fair to say, I've seen some pretty rubbish football in my time. You know, last decade has been terrific, by and large, but there's been some very middling stuff over the years. And alongside that, there have been some magnificent Manchester United teams that you are actually, as a rival fan, you can be nothing but jealous and envious of. Honestly, I mean, there's no other response.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, today, we're recording this podcast, and I have watched on Sunday Tottenham score 6 times at Old Trafford. And the day after the transfer window, I believe, you know, that Manchester United fans would be looking enviously at what Tottenham have achieved in relative terms, because it's just better. Now, think about that. Think about that in the last decade, that you could have a Tottenham fan say something like that and not just be antagonistic. You know, it's a genuine...
Yeah, it's lunacy. Decision.
Absolutely ridiculous. And yet it's factual, because that is what has happened. And that is Tottenham, big new stadium, lots of profit, good run the Champions League. All of these things have happened, but these are new, quick developments. And, you know, they're not even necessarily permanent, stadium aside yet. And yet this is the state of order at the moment. And that's ridiculous. How can you squander such an advantage? It's extraordinary that you can kind of have a situation where someone like me feels like my club has parity with this commercial juggernaut that honestly just trod us into the ground season after season after season, and it was just effortless. And yet here we are, and there's no harsher criticism than that, I don't think.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
I just don't understand how a football team gets itself into this position from the position that it was in before. It feels like it's so bad that you would have had to intentionally sabotage, you know, which perhaps a leveraged buyout is an intentional sabotage. Who knows? It's not normally a financial tool used to buy football clubs, is it? But I don't know. I imagine that supporters are upset and confused, and also I don't envy the position based on, you know, the finishing position last year. I mean, the response always seems to be to any Manchester United fan complaining, well, hold on, don't complain, you've got Pogba, Fernandes, Martial, Rashford, you know, you've got this long list of very good players, you've spent all this money on them, you know, like
it does
make it worse. It kind of misses the point, like the fact that however many £100 million have been spent on defenders at Manchester United, it's not good enough, you know, that doesn't mean like they need to spend more money. That doesn't mean that they should have spent more money, or they should have brought in different players or whatever. It just means there just appears to be something rotten about the procedure, which contributes at every level, in every department throughout the club.
I think it kind of brings us full circle, because if you talk about Paul Pogba, I've always seen Pogba as symptom rather than cause of the situation. He looks like a player that doesn't believe in what's going on around him. I mean, it's and there's more than one player in that category, and that really, I mean, that more than anything else, that's what showed on Sunday. It's just it just looks rotten.
Well, it's very likely that Paul Pogba wouldn't be there if it weren't for coronavirus, which again makes United's position with Dortmund all the more confusing, because if they are aware they have an asset in their own department who potentially, you know, another without the pandemic would have gone to Real Madrid, but there's obviously no way they're going to let him leave for a reduced rate as a result of the current financial climate. Why would they expect another club to do the same thing?
Surely Real Madrid are due a discount on account of the global economic situation. Yeah,
exactly. I know. Like, let's be nice to the Spanish giants. That, you know, everyone's struggling. Let's knock 30 million off the top or whatever, I think the expectation was that he would be gone. And I think that was probably his expectation too. So I feel sorry for all the players. I feel sorry for the manager. And in certain cases, I feel sorry for Ed Woodward because he's clearly in the wrong position. I think that's my opinion. I don't know how many new ways to try and tell the story. Like that's what's from our perspective at TIFO, like that's the thing that's kind of more frustrating than anything else, is it just seems every summer like it's the same problem. And it becomes coalesced with other things. It becomes coalesced with other supporters thinking that everyone at Manchester United is transfer obsessed, that they complain about money not being spent, whereas, you know, if you look at the actual figures, it's all being spent, that they're just complaining about nothing, that people are complaining about losing, that the players that they buy aren't good enough, that the managers aren't good enough, that, you know, everything in the world except, you know, anything actually changing at boardroom level. Of course, a story comes out about potential interest in Pochettino. The day, you know, deadline day, the story comes out. Of course it does. You know, why wouldn't it, for a start? Obviously it should from a footballing perspective, but every single time that there's a day, and it's normally deadline day, that there's a day where United are due a hefty amount of criticism from their supporters, something that gets people excited, something that, you know, perhaps changes the mood just enough for it to not become a cataclysm, just suddenly appears in a different outlet each time. Of course it does.
Do you know what it reminds me of is every year when it would get close to a season ticket renewal date at Arsenal, the transfer war chest stories would appear.
Yeah.
The 140 million on Benzema, and, you know,
yeah,
it's exactly the same principle.
It's clever bat people, you know. It's I don't know, probably not. Just my opinion, by the way. Don't know if that's true or not.
I feel like I've cheated myself out of like a bit of crowing about Tottenham, and I have received a little.
I gave you the opportunity. The very
you
did
no
crow,
no. I feel like I cheated myself out of it. I just want to, because I've received a little bit of flack on.
You have
Twitter
1 minute.
Because people say, oh, you know, I guess you'll find a way of not praising Jose Mourinho. Not at all. He's he had a brilliant week. That was one of the smartest bits of squad management. No, well, head patting too, but squad management over the course of a week, because between in the 5 days before beating Manchester United, Mourinho beat Chelsea with a depleted squad who were being asked to play for the fourth time in a week, which is just ridiculous.
Four games in 8 days, right?
Yeah, 4 games in 8 days in total. Got through their Europa League qualifier on Thursday. And then went to Old Trafford and produced one of the best performances of a Tottenham team in their modern history, in their Premier League history, certainly. And what's more, like, the transformation in Tanguy and Ndombele is remarkable. And I know there are a few negative stories floating around about Dele Alli, but at the moment, coming from where Ndombele was a year ago, and the lack of application and the lack of buy-in in being at Tottenham, the lack of interest, really, I think, probably fair to say, and his determination supposedly to leave the club, to get him to where he is now, the players do an awful lot of credit. He's obviously reconditioned himself and worked extremely hard over the off season. But you have to credit Mourinho. It's like a 2004 Mourinho story. That's the kind of the old man of management that you used to get. And I'm not equating one with the other. Mourinho.
You
still
should
has
though.
A long way to
no,
go.
No, you should, because you
I'm
know,
greatly encouraged.
But where's he at? He's at Tottenham. When has he been at an underdog club? Since he was at Chelsea, since he was at Milan, maybe, you know, certainly in terms of Europe. Since then, he was at Real Madrid, he was at Manchester United, he was back at Chelsea, who were a juggernaut by that point. He was at places where he was expected to succeed. And now he's at a team where to succeed would be, you know, particularly as a result of his own personal reputation as well, to succeed would be the surprise. And what's he doing?
At the moment, he's on the path to some kind of success. Let's temper it a little bit.
6-1 at Old Trafford is success.
Yeah, in that context, absolutely. But what I'll say is that I am quite negative about Mourinho. I'm not fond of him. I wasn't enthused at the idea of him coming to my club, and I'm still very, very cautious about it. But if you look up what I've written about him in the past, one of the things is there must still be some of this genius in inverted commas.
There he goes. He's getting to him. It's getting to him.
And all I've said, you know, I've said it more than once. I've written it for Football 365 and 442. If he could be quiet, if he could cut out the posturing, if he could cut out the media handling, and if he could cut out some of what's proven to be self-sabotage, there is a first-class manager there.
It's gone from, like, Uncle Harry's staying for a few months while, you know, his house has been taken away from him, to absolutely not, he's not allowed to stay, he's a terrible man, to maybe if he stops the, you know, if he stops the recreational heroin use and if he stops stealing from our, you know, our jewellery drawer...
if he'd only stop selling the furniture, that would be terrific.
In a year's time, you know, you'll be addicted to heroin as well, and you'll just be romancing under, under Uncle Harry.
The needle is nowhere near my arm, but what I will say is this has been his most positive week at the club, and it's nice, and it's a it's a chance
that
to
needle
talk
tube.
About. It's a chance to talk about Mourinho as a football manager rather than as a football personality.
Wouldn't that be nice? Good. Wouldn't it be nice if you had a manager who actually you did believe had a bit of genius in him? Listen, we've got to stop because I got to go, and so do you. We're going to have to redo the introduction because at the beginning, sports listeners will be interested to know that we said we'd talk about Liverpool, and we obviously haven't. So we'll redo that now, and you'll never know. Thanks so much for listening today. I would like to indicate that at some point in the near future, I'm going to ask my friend Paul Ansorge onto the podcast,
yes,
who
indeed.
Is a Manchester United
friend.
Podcaster, our friend of
Paul
course, from No Question About That. We were chatting about this last night, and I was very curious to hear his, as a Manchester United supporter as well as podcaster, his position on what happened. He's a very eloquent talker. You know, you might have heard him on this show before or listened to his show. So we'll bring him on at some point in the next couple of weeks because I want to hear someone who actually knows what they're talking about. Sorry, Seb, and sorry to myself, talk about Manchester United. And also probably with a little more compassion than we've done today. Or maybe not. Maybe not. And we'll do Liverpool as well at some point. Sorry. I mean, I don't suppose Liverpool supporters will be upset that we haven't talked about them because it would have been bad. So
I don't think it would have been the most flattering light, that session, would it?
No. We should really be apologising to Aston Villa. And you know what? We'll do you soon too. Oh, everyone wants us to do them. Isn't it nice? Gotta go now. Goodbye.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.